Yes.
Our Torah portion this week is Pinchas. You might see it spelled Pinchas. You might see it spelled Phineas in our English translations. But it's basically Numbers 25 through 29. And depending on your translation, the last verse might be 30 verse 1. The Torah portion covers several general topics, five actually. One regarding Pinchas or Pinchas and Midian, Yahweh's judgment of them, favorable for Pinchas and not so favorable for Midian. Numbers 26, the entire chapter is a census of this new generation. Where we are is Israel is now a whole new generation from the ones that left Egypt, for the most part, and they're camped. If this is Israel, my left arm held up, which is not Israel yet, the nation of Israel is, having wandered around in the wilderness, is coming in around to the right, my right side of that, about to cross the Jordan, and they're on a plain there called the Plains of Moab, or Sittim is the name of the actual city, and it's actually a lowland part before the river, before crossing the river, with Mount Peor, the mountains sort of behind them that they just came through. And a lot of the Torah takes place in Mount Peor, in that area of the Moabs, the Moabites. Numbers 27 talks about the daughters of Zelophehad, is the best I can pronounce that. And it's basically the tribe of Manasseh, the main leader of that tribe, their father, was killed. And they approached the elders, they approached Moshe, and said, you know, just because our dad died and he had no sons, shouldn't we, the daughters, inherit the land? Moshe checked in with Yahweh, got the answer, yes, rubber stamp, Manasseh still is a tribe. Also in that chapter, the second half of it, Yehoshua, the actual Hebrew name of Joshua, you may know, the star of the book of Joshua, is to succeed Moshe. Yahweh says to him, you're not going into the promised land. I'm going to let you go up and look at it, but you're not going in. And actually, Moshe says, well, we need somebody to lead the people. Are there going to be sheep without a shepherd? Who can you do that? Or who should we have? And Yahweh says, appoint Yehoshua, which actually Moses gave him that name, which means Yah's salvation. Before that, it was Hoshea, or you might see in your Bibles, Hosea. That's the same name, means salvation. And Moses renamed him Yehoshua, which is Yah's salvation. It also happens to be the exact same name as our Messiah, Yehoshua. Numbers 28 and 29, two whole chapters listing all of the offerings and all of the appointed times that we're to keep, all of the feasts. I'm going to zoom in on the part about Phineas or Pinchas, because though I was trying to find deeper, more insightful things, I just kept coming back to this one basic thing. What an example this fellow was. I want to read the entire chapter of Numbers 25, which goes a little bit before the Torah portion. And Israel dwelt in Shittim, and the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab. And they invited the people to the slaughterings of their mighty ones, or gods. And the people ate and bowed down to their mighty ones. Thus, Israel was joined to Baal Peor. And the displeasure of Yahweh burned against Israel. And Yahweh said to Moshe, take all the leaders of the people and hang them up before the sun, probably before sunrise, so that the burning displeasure of Yahweh turns away from Israel. And Moshe said to the judges of Israel, each one of you kill his men who are joined to Baal Peor. And see, one of the children of Israel came and brought to his brothers a Midianite woman before the eyes of Moshe and before the eyes of all the congregation of the children of Israel who were weeping at the door of the tent of meeting. And when Pinchas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, the high priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation and took a spear in his hand, and he went after the man of Israel into the tent and thrust both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. Thus, the plague among the children of Israel came to a stop. And those who died in the plague were 24,000. And Yahweh spoke to Moshe, saying, Pinchas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron, the priest, has turned back my wrath from the children of Israel, because he was ardent with my ardor in their midst, so that I did not consume the children of Israel in my ardor or zeal or jealousy. Therefore say, see, I am giving him my covenant of peace, and it shall be to him and to his seed after him a covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was ardent for his Elohim and made atonement for the children of Israel. And the name of the man Israel who was struck, man of Israel who was struck with the Midianite woman, was Zimri, son of Salu, a leader of a father's house among the Simeonites, Shimonites. And the name of the Midianite woman who was struck was Cozbi, the daughter of Sur. He was head of the people of a father's house in Midian. And Yahweh spoke to Moshe, saying, distress the Midianites, and you shall strike them, for they distressed you with their tricks, with which they deceived you in the matter of Peor and in the matter of Cozbi, the daughter of a leader of Midian, their sister, who was struck in the day of the plague because of Peor. Look at verse 11. Pinchas, son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, has turned back my wrath from the children of Israel, because he was ardent with my ardor in their midst, so that I did not consume the children of Israel in my ardor. Ardor, this translation uses that word, and it's actually spelled with an O-U-R because of a British influence here. The Hebrew word there behind it is chana. It seems like the emphasis is on the second syllable, chana. And it means ardor or zeal or jealousy. And I found Exodus 34, 12 through 16, which it's amazing how this is exactly a warning almost 40 years before of exactly what happened. I'm going to read Exodus 34, 12 through 16. Guard yourself, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land where you are going, lest it be a snare in your midst. 13, but break down their altars and smash their pillars and cut down their asherim, for you do not bow yourself to another mighty one. For Yahweh, whose name is jealous, a jealous El. 15, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they whore after their mighty ones and slaughter to their mighty ones, and one of them invites you and you eat of his slaughterings. 16, and you take of his daughters for your sons, and his daughters whore after their mighty ones, and make your sons whore after their mighty ones. This is exactly what happened Moab there with Baal Peor. How in the world did this whole second generation possibly fall to this? this new Israel, had just conquered Sihon and Og together. They were strong, they were unified, they were living in faith, they were acting out this supernatural life, taking over these major nations. Right before this, Balaam was unable to curse them for Balak, the king of Moab. But when he went up on the precipice to where he could see all of Israel and their organized tents and tribes, as far as he could see, he just said, "How lovely are your tents, O Jacob." He was blown away. There was organization. And there was definitely no relations with Moab at that time. We knew that Moab and Midian were talking, sisters, together politically. But apparently, for them to have gotten from where we were the chapter before with Balak and Balaam to whoring with the daughters of Moab, there had to have been peace made with Israel for Moab and Midian. They had to have somehow gotten into some sort of relations to the point that the leaders got involved with Baal Peor. Now, Baal Peor, Baal Peor. Baal means Lord. And it was a title that's often used when anyone is addressing their god. Peor, interestingly enough, is from a root that means a wide open gaping mouth, as in a ravenous beast, a hungry bird, appetite. It's basically the god of appetites. And the people were joined. And here, joining sounds like you can depart, but the actual word behind join is a lot more adhered to. It's more permanent. All the leaders were to be hung. This really struck me because why? I'm not sure. Did they not warn them? Did they not set an example? Did they not protect the people, which is the responsibility? There were exceptions, though. Not all leaders. The judges, obviously, were to go out and kill others besides leaders, men who had joined to Baal Peor. Eleazar, the priest, Pinchas, Yehoshua, and Caleb, obviously, were not killed in that, and as it's confirmed in chapter 26, verse 65. All the leaders were hung and all the other men who were joined to Baal Peor. And besides that, there was a plague through the nation of Israel, which killed 24,000. And yet, Pinchas, well, before I get into the covenant peace, to answer the question, how did they succumb to this? Balak couldn't possibly take over this huge nation of Israel. Decided with Midian, listen, we've got to somehow make peace with them, get involved with them, undermine them in some way, which probably came from Balaam and last week's teaching about how the enemy will use any weakness they could find, and in this case, possibly knowing the weakness of Israel being appetite, lust, women, that sort of thing, got underneath and infiltrated and caused this. We sort of have to just sort of fabricate that between the two chapters in a way, that somehow they're involved with them and eating with them and worshiping with them now. And it's easy to do even for us when you attack our appetites. You know, hunger is one of the hardest things. We in America today don't really know hunger. Not really, really. You know, we may keep the feast, we may fast, at other times, but we don't know really hunger. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of us have a little bit of an idol with our appetites that we don't really even know how bad it is. And we might be tested in that sometime. But it's through their appetites that this whole new generation fell. And yet, in 25, 12 through 13, Pinchas was blessed. Therefore say, see, I am giving him my covenant of peace, and it shall be to him. By the way, a covenant of peace, best friends forever, in today's vernacular, best friends forever. And it shall be to him and to his seed after him, a covenant of an everlasting priesthood because he was ardent for his Elohim and made atonement for the children of Israel. Remember, Yahweh's name is Jealous, and he's a jealous El. That's probably the best translation of ardent out of those three: zealous, ardent, or ardent, jealous, or zealous. He was jealous for his Elohim and made atonement for the children of Israel. Atonement, you know, we know that our Messiah was atoning for us. But in this case, it says that Pinchas made atonement for the children of Israel. Atonement means covering. It can mean reconciliation. And it alludes to using pitch in an ark, in a boat, to keep it from leaking. So it's a very solid, airtight, watertight seal, a type of covering that is a very good covering, a sealing. And the best I can figure here is that whereas Yahweh was about to wipe out the nation of Israel again, he just plain stopped when he realized, you know, there is a redeeming value here. There is ardor. There is love. There is obedience. There is zeal. There is jealousy for his God, he calls it there in the Word. It's his. He had jealousy for his God. Somebody there cares for me. Somebody there is still worth keeping this nation for. I think that's pretty much the meaning for it. A lot like not destroying Sodom and Gomorrah. If they can just find 10 people that are righteous, then I'll spare the whole city. I think this is probably one of those. Yahweh stopped the plague. Let's look at Phinehas a little bit more, or Pinchas. He was young, not likely a priest yet, because it doesn't say that he was. I don't think he acted so much out of creative zeal. I have an idea. I'm going to go take care of this. But out of obedience, because remember, all the leaders were to be hung. But it seems like this one leader was maybe still out of the camp and then came back after the fact. Oh, and this was one last remaining thing that needed to be dealt with. Levites, Pinchas' tribe, were chosen. They were known for executing Yahweh's plans explicitly, such as after the golden calf incident. The Levites were very instrumental in eliminating a lot of people there that would not join Yahweh. Pinchas was literally jealous for his God. And I see that as emotionally, genuinely moved. Like when you see folks out there in the world in some way just defiling the name of our Elohim, and it just, you feel it. It hurts. With Yahweh's jealousy, his name, his spirit, his name is not just a name like words. It's a reputation, a fame, his glory, his character, his authority, his power. All of these things are in the Hebrew word for name, Shem, Hashem. And his spirit, which is his character and his ministry and his work. Pinchas was a good reflection of his father, Eleazar. I mean, this young man that took action here through obedience against the grain of what was going on. I mean, you know that this man in this tent had family. Pinchas didn't care. This had to be dealt with, and he dealt with it. And obedience was with bravery. He was fearless. You and me, in a way, are young in the faith. The whole thing of coming to Torah, or for, if you're Jewish, coming to Messiah, is really not that ancient. It's there is a civilization in the first century which we follow, but for the most part, most of us have not been most of our lives in the faith. And he was likely not necessarily, and we're not likely not necessarily a priest or a leader yet, although there are some among us. Definitely chosen in this day and age. What's about to happen, what is happening in these days, with at least in America, I mean, if you're on the internet at all, searching on Torah, Hebrew roots, anything along this line, you'll just see that it's exploding. It's going crazy right now, and not only in this country, but around the world. Our website gets probably as many hits and visits regularly, hitting the teachings from Taiwan and Korea and other nations as it does America. Maybe as much at sometimes. We're filled with the Spirit. We have the Spirit. We have a sense of, we have the Word and we have the Spirit, which is a sense of His character, His ministry, what He wants to do. As that Spirit is in us, we have a certain jealousy for my God. Each of us can say that we have a genuine emotional sense of that. And we're obedient, which often requires bravery, fearless with love. We might actually be able to atone for others in the sense of praying for them, interceding for them. We're commanded to, and we might actually be able to stop plagues as such. I don't know. But this obedience, keeping the Ten Commandments, most of us are here on Shabbat, that's the fourth. These are usually the first commandments that we discover when we hear Yeshua saying over and over, keep my commandments, keep my commandments. Then we go back to what they are, and they're the ten. Obeying all of his commands is usually the next step. Yehoshua, Joshua 1:8, this book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have success. The Moedim we try to keep, the appointed times, feasts. And that brings us to whole chapters 28 and 29, which I'm going to just touch on here and say they're not just the holidays. The appointed times listed right here that are specific instructions by Yahweh to keep with offerings, which nowadays we give thanksgiving and praise as our offerings. We don't sacrifice animals because the temple isn't in place to do that, but we offer our time with him. We get into the word. We spend time with him, and it should be every day in the morning and in the evening. And I just want to take one touch on this. You know, every single one of us need to be in the word in the morning. Every morning, you should make some sort of a promise, commitment, change your schedule, do whatever you have to do to take at least 5 minutes, read at least one verse every single morning as a pattern in your life. And evening. For me, it's walking the dog at night and praying to the stars and thanking that I'm filled and satisfied for this good land that he's given us. Every Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh is the new moons. Pesach, a memorial dinner to remember that we were slaves, our people were slaves, and we were brought out by a miraculous hand. Matzot, or unleavened bread, first through the seventh day. Shavuot, 50 days later. Yom Teruah, the day of trumpets. Yom Kippur, the day of atonement, where we afflict our souls through fasting. Sukkot, first through the eighth. We build tabernacles in some cases. And there's really no other command there but to rest and gather and just plain party. I mean, they made more barbecued bulls during that holiday than any other, every day of that holiday. So that obedience leads to the goal of our instruction, why we're learning all of this, which is love from a pure heart, a clear conscience, and a sincere faith. Keeping the commandments is love, according to the second commandment. He who loves me keeps my commandments. Not keeping the commandments is sin. If you ever want to show somebody that, the definition of sin, if you think that every time you have another piece of cake, every time you do this or do that or think this or think that, that it's sin and you're a sin creature, you're always in sin, you're probably not. Because sin is defined in 1 John 3:4. And if you can remember that, 1 John 3:4, it says, sin is Torahlessness. if you are not keeping what says to do in the Torah, these feasts, commandments, and so on, yes. If those things that you're doing that you're just being guilt-ridden and sidetracked by are not listed in the Torah as something you should not do, you're probably not sinning. You may not be doing the wisest thing. It may not be the healthiest thing. It may not be the best thing or the most mature thing. But it's not sin if it's not Torahlessness or against the Torah. Obedience is loving and blessing his people, Israel. When we bless Israel, we receive the blessing of Abraham. Those who bless you will be blessed. And all the families of the earth will be blessed through you. And you can think about the passage about Yeshua with separating the sheep and goats. By what did you do for me, for Israel, even the least of my brethren? And our interceding possibly could even be atoning and stopping a plague. Could you imagine if we all started interceding for America to the point that Yahweh heard us and cancer stopped? Wow. Who knows what we could possibly be? Baruch Hashem. Please stand with me for closing of the Torah.